everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. It's 2018, and we're very excited to see where the esports industry goes, and we've got some big news. Off the back of the recent announcement of Jacob Tuff Andersen moving over to Infinite from ES North in Copenhagen, we thought that we'd bring Jacob on the show to have a chat about the motivations behind his move and what his views are on the prospect of esports in 2018. Is there a bubble? What can we do to mitigate against that? And just looking forward to potential improvements in managing a host of talent across multiple titles. Jacob, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. So just as a kind of FYI for everyone who's listening, Jacob and I actually worked on the Infinite move over the course of the last few months already, when the client, which is Chris Chaney, the president of Infinite, was looking at who would be the ideal candidate for this VP of esports role. He pointed right at Jacob, and we had quite a informal process just trying to understand, you know, where your head was at. Obviously, you were super happy with North and trying to just kind of look to where you can have the most impact over the course of the next few years. So it was actually a really interesting process from my side to kind of see how higher level hires can be transferred from one place to another and some of the politics that goes behind that. I don't think you'll want to get into the detail of that. but yeah, how was the entire process for you? Obviously, you're very happy. So what kind of spoke to you about the opportunity at Infinite that pretty much made it undeniable?
So it was kind of a, you know, special in the sense that esports is all the rage right now. So being approached by headhunters is quite common these days. It has been throughout 2017, actually. From all places of the globe. For me in particular, I've had a lot of interest from Germany, the UK, and then just more established international teams. But I've been used to just saying no interest from the get-go. I've been meeting with, I think, 2 out of 11 or 12. I was doing a headcount the other day. I think I had 11 headhunters come to me over the past year, of which I've only met with 2 of them. And I was about to turn you down as well until you disclosed who it was. Optic for me has always been, the team that has been the best at driving the story behind the team, behind the sport, behind the game. And they've built up something amazing. The Green Wall is probably the most well-known fan base in all of esports and rivals that of regular sports teams. And I really like the values that Hector and Ryan have been putting out with Optic. They seem like they care about the people they work with first and foremost. They make it about the people, not so much about the results, which on one hand is obviously super appealing to the human side of me, and on the other it also posed a challenge because I'm a competitor at heart and winning is everything. So that was something I immediately saw as being a focal point of which I could focus on, help having the top results across all the titles that Infinite and its teams such as Optic will be going into. So there was a lot of appeal in the sense that I think Optic is the front runner on so many levels in esports, and at the same time there's room for improvement, which there are in all companies. But this was a place that I could really foresee making a difference.
Yeah, it's making that hard transition into non-console titles and just how they've kind of taken that methodology and approach to kind of building a fan base and actually speaking to the community that I've been really impressed with. Since I started working on this role, I've been kind of taking as deep a dive into their content as possible to kind of get an understanding and an experience for how they speak to their fans, and a kind of the commitment to vlogging from Hector, and that kind of spreads out to the rest of the organization. The Vision series, the kind of quality of the Christmas memes that we saw around the release of the League of Legends team. It just shows a really high bar for the kind of polish that they put on a lot of their stuff. And I think that a lot of esports teams know their audience very well, but in terms of speaking with them, regularly communicating with them and giving them insane footage of the various tournaments that their players are actually competing in, I don't know if many actually reach that quality. So yeah, it's been an inspiring part of the journey as well. So that's actually potentially converted me over to Call of Duty as an esport, which I was very much against because, you know, the PC Master Race and all that sort of thing. James is shaking his head at me. But I wasn't really sold on it, but after watching so many of these tournaments, you know, I'm completely sold. The level of skill that they have there is absolutely insane, and the amount of communication, they actually seem more vocal than in a lot of other esports. So
exactly. The whole storyline that is driven behind Call of Duty, I find really amazing. You know, the players, the personalities, and how emotional they get. I think one thing that PC players especially has yet to discover is how emotions help you not only perform better, but also, you know, create a fan base and help the industry grow bigger. And I'm tired of watching tournaments where you have like this team or this player who's just won, and then he goes out on stage, and you know, sure enough, he's probably nervous. They're not used to being in the spotlight in that regard. But when you can't even spot the joy on them, like if I'm happier sitting behind my screen at home halfway across the world than he is when he's just won a tournament,
sure, of course,
then there's a disconnect for me. And this is something I've never really felt in Call of Duty, which is why I was naturally drawn to it, in the sense that you can really feel that the competitors care so much about it.
Yeah. It's to be honest, when you come from PC esports, if you look at, say, Call of Duty, and especially Gears of War, there's a lot of heat that's thrown kind of in between the maps there, from what I've seen.
But they used to be in Counter-Strike as well, you know. Virtus Pro famously, almost a decade ago, sat and shouted at their enemies and yelled Kurva all the time. And one of their old players, Kuben? Well, one of their old players who's no longer with the team would sit and incessantly shout throughout the game. Oh, it's the orb player. I forgot. Luke was it.
Yeah.
You know, these, and Lord as well, they would all sit and shout constantly, and a lot of Counter-Strike teams in 1.6 did that. And nowadays, I feel it's almost frowned upon. I remember there was a case about Immortals Counter-Strike, or the former Immortals team from in Counter-Strike, where some fans were complaining that they were loud and shouting and shouting bad stuff in Brazilian and stuff like that, but that to me isn't unappealing. That to me is an added layer of entertainment to me that I as a viewer, you know, love to watch.
And that's pretty transferable across esport and all sport, really. You know, if someone is loud and brash, you either love them for it or you hate them for it, but regardless, you're probably going to tune in to see them win or lose. Even as someone working in esports, trying to keep track of all the personalities in the space isn't actually that difficult because there are so few that actually stand out. So one of the things that, one of the massive parallels that I normally make between esports and other sports is in mixed martial arts. Like, the obvious example here is Conor McGregor. You know, he rose from winning on the regional circuit, being exceptionally confident both in his words and in his fighting style, and then proceeded to, you know, predict when he was going to finish people. He would be brash. He sometimes actually pushed the line. He was actually quite disrespectful to the Brazilian people, but I think that just made them want to tune in more to see Jose Aldo knock his block off. And actually, that kind of side of mental warfare actually made his 13-second knockout of one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world even more impressive.
Yeah.
So I would love to see that play out in a, obviously in a respectful way, but at the highest level of esport. It would just add the extra bit of spice to it, which you sometimes see more in the production than you see from the players themselves. I'm not quite sure why that is.
I mean, sometimes you're tempted to argue that it's a waste that Thorin is an analyst and a journalist rather than a player, right? Because a player with Thorin's personality would be interesting.
Oh yeah, man. Regardless of what you think about his style, I would love to see him just get camped repeatedly and just to see him tell all, just to see what he'd be able to do if he was able to pop off. You know, his acceptance speech at the Esports Awards last year was pretty on point. It was just like, it's one more for the bad guys, which is exactly what another UFC fighter called Chael Sonnen used to do. You know, he talked his way into some of the biggest fights that I've ever been in the UFC with pretty mediocre skills. He was quite a highly ranked wrestler in his time, but his stand-up was pretty dreadful. I'm still quite sure that I could beat him in a kickboxing match. but he talked the biggest amount of trash. It had this weird poetic tone to it. And he talked himself into some of the biggest fights. He kind of preceded McGregor in many ways. And it kind of made his entire career, since he's actually retired from the ring, he's got a strong content and commentating and analyst kind of media empire in his own little bubble with his podcast, with his YouTube, with his working for a bunch of other fighting promotions on kind of selling what they're doing. I mean, he does fight for Bellator now and again, but he's pretty much in retirement and it's only for those big fights. So that just shows that even with less skill, that personality just kind of can either make or break you. So I would love to see some shade being thrown.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we're looking towards the future of where esports can improve, not just this year, but next year as well, it's one of the biggest pieces of jargon that we've seen thrown around is the esports bubble. In your opinion, do you think that with all of the franchising investment that's been thrown in, do you think that there is a bubble that is being created, or do you think that this is just something that people tend to get overly hyped about and concerned about?
I think there's a bubble in a sense that there's definitely a lot of investors right now who won't be in the space 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily because they think they will probably think it's a bad investment, but it's not because it necessarily is a bad investment. It's just that, you know, they either chose to listen to the wrong people, they ran the wrong risk and so forth. There's definitely going to be a lot of people who's going to have their fingers burned on this and lose some money on it. But there's also going to be, and I expect this to be the majority of the investors, people who's content with their investment, and not only that, feels like it's a strong move moving forward. I think a lot of these people, these big famous businessmen who's entered the space, they wouldn't do so if they didn't actually do some background check on it first. You know, that there's something to be said for the fact that all of these American investors, for instance, are going into it in the way they are, and they wouldn't do this, I expect, if they weren't absolutely sure that this would be the next future sport, right? So an issue we complain a lot about right now is the fact that there's a lot of these infamous esports consultants who's advising people in the wrong way and so forth, but you know, it's so short-sighted to just say, oh, they're going to make or break the industry within the next year, because everyone's going to eventually learn, what did this guy do? What did this guy do? Who's good and who's not? You know, there's bad seeds across all industries. There will always be bad seeds across all industries. So it doesn't worry me all too much. I think a bigger problem is the fact that whether the viewership is where we think it is.
Because the metrics are pretty inflated, or they're actually protected by the publishers quite a lot of the time. You know,
yeah.
I was doing a piece of research for London and Partners, which I've mentioned on the podcast a few times, trying to help them put together a document that would assist with making London and the UK a future esports hub, because the scene is quite far behind the rest of Europe and the globe, really. But in terms of viewership, we're actually really strong, but the actual kind of business infrastructure is less developed. And I was able to get all the kinds of data that they wanted in terms of who plays what, how that gets broken down on a on a regional level, various other kind of business tools, like what have been the premier events in the UK, who are the organisations that they should be speaking to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when it came to speaking to, and I'm quite happy to be very open with this, when it came to speaking with Riot, with ESL, with Gfinity, even Faceit to a certain extent, active viewer number and precise viewer metrics on what their events actually did, they were really shady about disclosing any of that. And most of the detail that I was able to find was already kind of 2 or 3 years out of date, and I'm not even sure if that was realistic then. So it's quite an obvious concern, because you can't really, how can you pitch sponsorship? How can you realistically, you know, get other partners involved? How can you activate on the audience if you're not even sure how big it is?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the only bubble, you know, that's the only thing that we should worry about. It's not about all the bad seed in esports. Mm. It's not whether the investors will leave, you know, investors will come and go. But if there's a bubble, it's built on castles in the sky, basically. You know, it's whether or not there's an actual fan base, a viewership that is worth putting your money into. And if these numbers that are reported are skewed or misconstrued in a way where you mislead the investors, yeah, then they're all going to, you know, pull out eventually, because the advertising dollars won't stand to the investment that they put
yeah,
into it.
That's true.
So,
yeah,
you know, within the next 24, 36 months or so, I expect us to be able to sort of gauge realistically when, you know, more engaged companies that has everything riding on it will need to know the actual numbers. So, you know, things like Overwatch League will be important to the future to the more, you know, the short term. I say short term, but within the next 10 years, you know, is it going to be another CGS? Are we going to be put back 10 years? Or
yeah,
is it going to succeed? And then we just keep rolling the way we have since 2011. That's sort of where we are right now. Whether sure. I think there's esports in 2030, yeah, I think there will be. I think it'll be massive by then. And there'll also be esports in 2050. The biggest problem here is how fast do we get to where everyone wants to get, you know. Right now it's sort of the Wild West, and everyone's hunting for gold, but no one knows where it is. And we can have esports be massive in 2020, or we can have to wait to 2030. That's how I perceive it, at least.
Yeah, that's quite a good way of putting it, actually. So do you think that the realistic numbers are actually being thrown around when it comes to building these business partnerships, or do you think that they're just not being shared with anyone? And even in kind of in a sales and marketing and in a B2B setting, do you think there's still kind of these almost catchphrases of, you know, the League of Legends Worlds for 2017 had 1.2 billion hours watched, which, and there's no actual specific viewer data apart from like that the semi-finals were viewed more than the finals. You know, these metrics change year on year, so there's not even any consistency. It's just it's quite peculiar.
Yeah,
for me.
I mean, I think it's those numbers are misleading, but I think all the marketing companies and the investors and so forth will eventually catch on. You know, maybe they'll get their fingers burned the first time they enter this space, but they want to be here because this is the target group that they want to appeal to. You know, they're here for a reason, and more companies will follow suit. It's just about expectations. Once they expect the numbers to be that way, because that's apparently how you do it in esports, then they'll, you know, change their expectations and act accordingly. Maybe they'll put in less money, or they'll go somewhere that is better suited for them, but still within the realm of gaming or esports, because I think that in itself is not going to change. You know, they have the target group here. The demographic is exactly what they're looking for. So that doesn't worry me. It's all about experience. And once they have that experience, they'll put their money where they best see fit. Right now they're taking quite a gamble, you know, depending on who they listen to, obviously. And then secondly, is this actually true or not? They choose to believe these major companies, Blizzard, Riot, and so forth, and for good reason, because why shouldn't they? But they'll probably learn in Riot's case in particular that it's probably not as good as the numbers are portrayed, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the kind of symptoms or the results of having so much control over the IP, you know. In our Christmas special, we had Tobias Sherman on and Simon Abadolt from Foundry 4, and they were, contrary to the general kind of endemic esports tone about Riot, Tobias made it abundantly clear that Riot are 100% responsible for kind of putting in the early investment and actually bringing esports to the kind of level that it is today.
Oh, I think so. Definitely. Yeah, I wouldn't personally be where I am if it wasn't for Riot. So,
sure.
You know, I'm not a Riot hater by any means. And coming from a Dota background, that actually says a lot, because Dota people usually are.
It's almost impossible. You're this unicorn. We finally found you, the one that can play.
I receive a lot of hate, or, you know, joking hate maybe, from the Dota community due to my background with Riot as well. And in a lot of ways, you know, you could say I, in a sense, sold out when I had my LCS team and so forth. But I actually enjoyed it, and I wouldn't be without it either. It taught me a lot. And it's been, Riot were great to work with. You know, every company has its shortcomings, but overall, I think They want it a lot, and they do a great job in what they do. So I wouldn't be without my experiences with Riot or League of Legends, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't personally play the game, but that doesn't mean I don't like working within the space.
Yeah, I mean, I have no issues at all with anyone who's been working in the Berlin office. I've had nothing but awesome experiences. We had Jason Yeer on a few months back now. And he was actually responsible for, he was one of the people that really took a roll on the dice with working with me when I first started working in the space. You know, they had some very senior roles that they were working on with their commercial director and the lead producer for the EUCS. And they could have quite easily gone with an agency that had a stronger network in, say, sport or entertainment. But I just couldn't stop talking about how much I was a bard main. And how I, you know, was just a ride or die fire for just wanting to have an impact in this industry and just really wanted to be given a chance. And yeah, so I will always have a very close tie to Riot and what they've been doing. I actually still play League these days, which I've said on the podcast before, which I'm sure a lot of Dota fans will throw lots of shade at, but yeah, I don't know. I just, Bard is a great, he's a great champion to play, man. He's silent, he's super mobile, he's unique, he has the, you know, he can impact the fights. He's like a Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy, or he's like a Chewbacca in Star Wars. Having someone that isn't actually speaking puts the audience in that, or who isn't kind of understandable in terms of their emotions, actually allows the audience to come along on the journey of the story with them. So
right.
I feel like I'm able to RP that kind of character more than someone who's, I don't know, a bit more of a weeb samurai dude like a Yasuo or something.
But that's like, as I grow older, this is where I start realizing, you know, it doesn't matter what title you play, you can enjoy all esports the way most gamers play a lot of different games. There's no need for me to be opposed to Riot Games or League of Legends, the same way I'm not towards Blizzard and neither Overwatch, StarCraft, or anything else for that matter. You know, and this is something I guess for a lot of people only age can change, but I thoroughly enjoy watching most esports for different reasons, and I wouldn't be without it. I wouldn't be without neither League of Legends, Overwatch, Counter-Strike, Call of Duty, or any of the other titles. I think the more the merrier. And they all help each other grow as well, you know. Riot learned a lot from Dota in its inception, and because of what Riot did with LCS, Valve learned a lot putting on the international tournament.
Sure.
Moving forward, in the same way, Valve then looked at Dota for their Counter-Strike circuit and looked, what should we do? What shouldn't we do? Let's try something different, and so forth. And now we have Overwatch League coming out, and by all means, if the it looks great. I think the show they put on is great. They've put a lot of emphasis and respect into how important the observing part of the game is.
Yeah, I love the studio that they had for the preseason, just the layout with all the colors and everything, and just that aspect of it. I was actually really impressed with that.
Yeah, and they shortcut this process by watching other titles or, sure. learning from years of watching, for instance, LCS. This is how the show should be, la, 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 la. And we know from other esports titles that we need to focus or put a lot of emphasis on our observing part of the game, for otherwise the viewership won't be able to understand it. And this could have taken them years to learn if it wasn't for previous or different titles. So in that regard, I think we should all cherish the fact that esports is not just one title. It makes every other game better.
Yeah, it's quite easy to be partisan early on. And I think that's especially the case within MOBAs, because there is such a massive barrier for entry to actually get literate in the game. If you've spent a couple of years playing League, they're just to even learn the meta or the combinations or, how all these new heroes and champions actually play together, regardless of which MOBA you go to next. I can understand why people are a lot more inclined to be maybe less honest with themselves and kind of dig their heels in the ground and say, no, this is a better game, mostly because that's just what they're used to. But it's so hard. I've made a point of trying like a good, say, 10 to 30 hours of most esports titles. Now, I don't necessarily play as much as Overwatch as I used to, and I kind of did really enjoy Dota when I was playing it, but I found that for someone who has less time and is a slightly more casual, the League has enough depth that it's still kind of mentally stimulating without all of the complete and utter chaos that you can have just by kind of making your own way through the map, by slicing down all the trees and all the sort of interplay, and everything's overpowered in Dota, so it's almost impossible. And it makes a lot of sense that you have this point of view, especially when you consider the new role, which has kind of higher level strategic responsibility for all things player experience across all of the esports titles that Infinite is engaged with. Having that on hand and very direct knowledge with most of the major titles and a track record of being in a space where you've been able to kind of get up to speed on what is the new best thing, that's really important for this kind of role. Which kind of leads me on to one of the things that I wanted to mine in on with you. We've had Weldon Green on, who was one of the performance analysts and coaches for CLG, G2, TSM, as well as a few others, I think, in League of Legends. So we had quite an interesting conversation about performance optimization and talent management in esports. I think you and I have spoken multiple times about player houses, and they make sense for specific titles that have a completely different schedule, but maybe the future will be a more professional working environment. From your side, kind of looking top down across most of these titles, what is the biggest area of improvement, apart from obviously being a loudmouth that we've already spoken about? What's the biggest area of improvement that you would focus on with pro players? I mean, everyone's obviously unique, has their own obstacles, has their own challenges, and has their own strengths. But if you had to pick one unifying area of improvement for pro play, what would you choose?
Professionalism as an overarching theme, that it's not being too specific, but I think there's the whole mentality change, both from the teams themselves, the organizers and so forth, but definitely also from the players. The players' needs, at least that is how I perceive it, they need to come up, be brought up with a coaching structure the same way we see other sports, because right now a lot of players will come in with the wrong mindset, the wrong attitude towards how it is being a working professional athlete, what that entails. There's a lot of laziness, there's a lot of there's a lack of education as well. It's not just them not wanting to or not being lazy. It's also the fact that they don't necessarily know what to do and what is the right thing to do and so forth. So I think educating the professional circuit as a whole, whether it's players, coaching staff, owners, and so forth, I think everyone needs to to grow a lot, to really take it to the next level. I see a lot of players that don't know what to do about the, you know, how to behave themselves as a role model. They don't know how to best optimize their training regimen. They don't know how to get the most out of their performance on stage.
With the ECS in Cancun, it was almost a meme on Twitter. It was whichever team was least hungover was probably going to win the event, because people were just,
yeah, for instance,
all the players were out. Yeah.
On a more contractual level, you know, negotiating and having a set framework of what it entails being a player and what the contracts look like, what can you expect, what can the employer expect of you. Moving on to, you know, some of these people are starting to make a lot of money. Wealth management, what's to come after esports, because a lot of them treat it as if it's a day-to-day job, more or less, you know, where you wouldn't be able to tell that they could actually go on to do this for 10 years the same way the Virtus Pro and Counter-Strike has. A lot of them act as if, they take it as if, well, this could probably be over in 6 months, rather than think, what is the next step for my career? I think a player that has really come across as being the most mindful of the people I've met about his prospects with esports and always thinking ahead has been Kerrigan from FaZe Clan. Mm. He's a very well thought out guy who knows his value. He understands his own value. He also understands what it takes to be the best. And he has that right working mentality, but at the same time also knows what he had to do in order for him to secure his future, whether that's saving right now or getting himself an education. You know, he's done both, from what I know. So that is really where I think players in particular has a lot to learn. And then, you know, it's on the employers to teach them, but it's also a more general thing with the space itself, because in football there's coaches from the age of 4 and upwards. That isn't there yet.
It's more of a reflection on the kind of ecosystem as a whole, right?
Yeah.
I completely get that. I mean, if you look back to kind of the older days of boxing and older days of rugby and football and American football, you know, just the kind of the approach to how seriously play was taken only elevated as the business of the space got larger and larger. So hopefully, and I think I do think that the kind of pre-event drinking and that kind of just example, I think is very much a Counter-Strike issue. Maybe I'm being quite naive there, but I think just because of the amount of events, there's a lot of international travel. So I don't know how much that plays into maybe some other esports communities, but hopefully as the overall economies of scale and the kind of just the prospects or potentials of the space and are more correctly explained to players, or they have the support network to make these mistakes and learn from them and don't make them again.
Yeah.
Be they a financial thing, you know, be the kind of maybe having larger squads when there are more subs. So if someone has a disciplinary action against them, you know, they're actually taken off.
Yeah, that's
off
something
the pitch or off the chair, you know.
That's something I'm really looking forward to, and what I really like about Overwatch. Another reason for why this whole me taking the job with Infinite and so forth was interesting to me. It's because I get to grasp all of esports on the highest level, you know, whether it's LCS with Optic League of Legends or it's Call of Duty or Counter Strike, but also the Houston Outlaws with Overwatch and so forth. You get to be a part of growth across esports wherever it may be.
Sure.
And that's something I really like that Blizzard is doing. The whole, from the get-go, ingraining that a lineup isn't the 6 people on stage. It's, you know, 8 or 9 people. It's more role-specific. It's, you know, it sort of embraces that whole having a bench. And you know, LCS is doing the same thing right now. One thing that's very lacking in Dota and Counter-Strike.
Yeah, I really like that, because you can have, like, one of the biggest analytical points from the LCS world was having SKT. I think it was Bengi just sat on the bench and watching the failings of the team that were on stage, and then coming on, processing what the other team was doing, and just completely countering it. And like, you know, not just from a health perspective and a way to motivate players. You know, you have a lot of potential competitive options as well if you have a deeper roster. Really interesting. So I hope to see the space move more in this direction over the course of the next few years. We have hit the end of our slot for this episode, so man, thank you very much, one, for coming on the journey and starting at Infinite. I really cannot wait to see what you're going to be doing over there. I'm actually going to be out in Texas in the next few weeks, so I'm sure I'll actually get to see you IRL then as well, so that'll be awesome.
That sounds great. Let's have a stick together.
So we've got one more question for you before I let you go, which is our recurring segment. Over the Christmas holidays, we weren't able to come up with a better idea for the structure of this question, so I'm just going to throw it at you anyway. For this week, it's called Overtime. Mm-hmm. Jacob, if you could tear up the script and start again right now in esports, in any title, past, present, fantasy or future, what role would you go for in esports and why?
I would become a team owner 5 to 10 years ago and stick with it.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that.
I'm it's not just for the fact that you could have sold the way a lot of companies, including my own, did. It's also that you get to build from the scratch up and really get in on the ground floor and be a part of it from the get-go. I think one thing I learned with North is the fact that it's actually surprisingly hard just asserting yourself and making a name for yourself amongst the brands that has already done so. I think that's why, that's one of the reasons for why I really, really appreciate what Noah is doing with Immortals and Carlos with G2, because they're sort of young organizations, but they've done a tremendous job in creating fan base and a story behind their teams.
Yeah, agreed.
So I think that would be it. You know, that way I'd also get to be my own boss again, which, you know, is always nice. Not to say that I'm not very appreciative of where I am today.
No, I 100% appreciate that, and I think that, to be honest, if everyone is truthful with themselves, and that's the role that a lot of people would take. You know, own your own team, get in early, have the strength or the faith or the players or whatever you need to kind of weather the early storms and stay relevant. You know, and there is no better example than Optic for an organization that have really done that and kind of built up the loyalty. I remember watching Hutch on YouTube, like way back in the day, before I even knew that he was actually a pro player. I just used to find him really interesting to watch back on the early Call of Duty days. So
yeah,
and he's kind of stepped away from YouTube more recently, but you know, I completely went on a massive journey with him. He was very, very upfront with a lot of his own personal issues and kind of breakups, anxiety, you know, adjusting to kind of new opportunities, and maybe some didn't work out the way that he wanted them to. Some were absolutely amazing, and kind of just learning with him, you know, building those relationships over the last few years. You know, there are certain content creators or players that have been around since then that, you know, I will never actually forget, because there are lots of lessons that I've learned, you know. And,
right.
And those are people that were kind of there for me as a place to go to, obviously from very far away, that I could empathize with or learn from. So that kind of loyalty and that track history is pretty hard to replicate and is super inspiring. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing, my friend.
Definitely.
Anyway, I can't wait to see you soon. We'll obviously bring you back on once you've settled in and you're a few months down the pipeline.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear how everything is going. Where can the audience reach out to you if they want to get in touch?
I think best way would be through Twitter at The Milk. That's how you pronounce my nickname, actually. Milk.
Milk.
It's Danish and means milk. It's pretty straightforward, but it's caused quite some trouble for people over the years.
Yeah, it looks like more of a mouthful than it is. Awesome. Well, dude, have a lovely rest of the week, and I will speak to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen who have tuned into this episode, thank you very much for your time. If you want to reach out to us, my Twitter is at Barely Qualified. The spelling will be in the description. I'm not going to spell it for you. And if you want to reach out to us on Facebook, it'll be LFG Esports HR. We've got so many more episodes for you over the course of the next few months. A lot of those we planned out on a live streaming schedule that we'll be giving you some more insight into as of when that's fleshed out. But yeah, thank you very much for your time, and we'll speak to you soon. Ciao.